Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
They are the crucial components in our phones, computers, cars and wind turbines, but now in the global trade war they're being weaponized. China controls the vast majority of rare earth minerals, which it is leveraging amidst the current global trade war. Now in recent weeks it has curbed global access to rare earths and to the permanent magnets that they go into, and this is part of its response to American tariffs and other global trade tensions. Well, here to tell us more about the consequences from Brussels is Antonia Zimmerman, who's trade reporter with Politico, and from China, Dennis Staunton, Beijing correspondent with the Irish Times. Antonia, we'll come back to rare earths in a moment, but I just want to ask you about the reaction in Brussels to the fresh tariffs on Canada, which we heard about overnight. Donald Trump now saying that he's going to put 35% on imports from next month. He's threatened as well to impose blanket tariffs of 15 to 20% on most other trade partners. Is this being seen as a wobble today in the EU negotiations with the States?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think it's just seen as yet another example of the unpredictability that we have when dealing with Trump. I mean, he's not only, you know, moving the tariffs up to 35%, he's also, you know, calling on Canada to collaborate more when it comes to preventing drug trafficking across the border. So there, I think there's really an element there of, well, you know, you never really know what Trump is going to do next. And the EU is currently in the very much in the final negotiation stages with the US. And Trump has also said that he is, you know, expecting to send a letter to the EU within the next couple of hours. So really, I think what EU negotiators are seeing is yet again an example of you don't really know what you're getting yourself into when you're negotiating with Trump.
Yeah, and you don't know when a deal is a deal. You know, if that's going to be the end of it once you have something signed with Donald Trump, because it seems he can always go back and open it up again, and that clearly must be a concern in the EU too. Now, let's go back to rare earth minerals. Can you explain to us what exactly they are and just how important they are to our global supply chains and to all of these products that we rely on so much now?
So rare earths are 17 minerals, and they're part of all the minerals that we call critical. And we call them critical because they're needed in a lot of applications that we need for our energy transition, but also in the digital sector and in the defense sector, which obviously at this point in time has really gained in importance. And so when we think about rare earths, they're really in almost anything that you use in your daily life as well. So in your smartphone, in TVs, in laptops, they're used in car engines, in wind turbines, but also, as I said, in a whole range of defense applications. And the issue there is that China has essentially a monopoly in the sector. So it's controlling about 60% of the extraction of rare earths worldwide, but, and that's even more important, 90% of the processing. And so China's monopoly in the sector really goes across the whole supply chain, right? Because if you have these minerals, you need to mine them first, then you need to refine them, and then you need to manufacture them, which in the case of rare earths is about turning them or using them to actually make permanent magnets that we need in all of these applications that I've just mentioned.
So China very much has its hands on the tiller here. Dennis, to bring you in on this point, I mean, Beijing has the upper hand when it comes to rare earth minerals. They know it too. Have they decided to weaponize the control of these materials?
Yes, they have. So they've, you know, over the years, they've occasionally turned on and off the tap with these things with different trading partners. What they did this time is in April, they introduced a licensing system. So basically what they said was, whoever you are, anywhere in the world, if you want to import these rare earths, you've got to get a license, which will run for 6 months. And so they can, essentially they can make these, the licensing process go fast or slow. And what was happening with the Americans, for example, particularly, was that they weren't getting any. And so this was, you know, one of the automobile factories in Chicago actually had to halt production because they weren't getting this stuff in. And as you just heard, you know, there's nowhere else really that anybody can get them from, certainly over the next while. And so what they've really done is, you know, in a way, it's partly a response to the kind of thing which the Americans and to a lesser extent the Europeans have been doing to the Chinese over the last few years, saying, we're not going to allow you to have, you know, high-end semiconductors or whatever. So they put on these export bans and they cite national security. The Chinese are also citing national security. It's kind of fake, but they're doing it anyway. And basically, it's just a way of hitting back in the trade war, and they use it as leverage. So when the Americans did a deal with the Chinese, or a kind of a framework for negotiations, they agreed to ease the restrictions on the Americans. And the Americans said, will you do that for everybody else as well? And the Chinese said, well, no, because, and you know, they didn't say this, but the reason is that they want to make sure that other people don't do deals with America which will disadvantage China. So a part of the price for, say, a good tariff deal with Donald Trump could be that you kind of target China yourself. So they want to use this again as leverage. So what the Chinese say is that they have been issuing licenses to European companies, but the European companies are saying they're not getting them fast enough.
Okay, so come back then to Europe, Antonia, and what we're planning to do about it. Obviously, there's a short-term problem and there's a medium to long-term problem as well. And there are some efforts in Europe to get this industry going within the EU, right?
There are. I mean, currently we only have one factory making permanent magnets and refining rare earths in Europe, and that's in Estonia. But we've also seen, especially now after China imposed these export controls, a couple of companies, you know, making their voices heard in the debate. We've, you know, seen one in France, for example. I think the main challenge here is obviously, as I've said earlier, China controls the extraction of them, and the EU itself has barely any reserves of rare earths. You'd have to, you know, look at Brazil or India, for example. So the idea here is not to, you know, build up an entire supply chain, because that's just literally impossible, but rather to say, okay, let's see where we can step in different parts of the supply chain, be that, you know, we're looking at refining more here in Europe, or we're looking at manufacturing more permanent magnets, to then see how, you know, we can at least, well, you know, we might not be able to attack China's monopoly as such, but still make more efforts to diversify. And that's really the key word that you hear here in Brussels these days, is really diversification. Mm-hmm. So that would be, you know, ramping up more production in Europe, but also looking at more partners around the world who might be more willing to supply
them in an easier way. And Dennis, would that worry the Chinese, do you think, this dipping the toe in the water, or perhaps seeking out new partners who could produce these rare earth minerals who are not the Chinese?
Not really, because actually the Japanese tried this a few years ago when they had a dispute with China over some islands. And the Chinese cut off the supply. And they then decided they were going to try to diversify, and they were going to try to get them from Australia. But it hasn't really worked. And the problem is that, you know, the Chinese are very good at creating these entire supply chains. And they just do it more cheaply. And so you decide, and the Europeans and the Americans can decide to do this. It's going to take some years for them to get it together. And so in the meantime, a lot of these companies, these manufacturers, they need the stuff now. And so if the Chinese, for example, in 6 months decide that they're going to, you know, the Europeans aren't playing ball with them, they're going to slow down this stuff, then it's really going to hit European manufacturers very hard. And that's, so I think that the Chinese, certainly for the, you know, in the medium term, I think they still do have the upper hand on this one.
Mm-hmm. The irony here, Antonia, is that the US were really good at this, weren't they? Back in the 80s, they dominated the mining of these things, but they've ceded control to China.
Well, I mean, I think as we've just heard, China is just, you know, very good at producing at a very low cost. And that's the main challenge, I think, that we're also facing now. And back then, I mean, China also recognized very early on, much earlier than anyone else, that these minerals were going to become so important, looking at, you know, our energy transition, but all of, you know, the other applications that we need today as well. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, ramped up this monopoly, and at the same time thought about, well, how can we actually use this you know, how can we weaponize this monopoly to give us a comparative advantage also when it comes to trade negotiations, for example?
Well, there's a reason, Dennis, isn't there, that other countries, many other countries, didn't want to get involved in this business because China has paid a really heavy environmental price for all of this extraction.
Yes, it has. Yeah, and it's a really very damaging thing. I think they may have developed some new techniques that ease it up a bit, but certainly it is something which does create huge environmental problems. And China now is actually much more conscious of environmental damage than it was in the past. And so it is a price they have to pay. I mean, I think that the Chinese would, you know, generally speaking, they're in favor of free trade because they export an awful lot. And so in their ideal world, nobody would be applying export restrictions or export bans at all. But if others are going to apply them to them, then they'll apply them to other people.
And would you agree with the sentiment, which I read this morning, an analyst saying that the export controls that China has at its hands are much more powerful than the tariffs that Donald Trump is putting on?
I think so, yeah, because, really just because it's kind of like a tap you can turn on and off. And, you know, from most economies, imports are actually more important than exports. You import stuff because you need it. The exporting of stuff you can kind of cope with. So in other words, if China were to lose the American export market, that'd be about 12% of its exports. So it would be a big hit, but they still have the other 88%. And so in a sense, even if he were to go back to these tariffs of more than 100%, I think that China, although it would suffer from them, it could cope with them. Whereas if you start shuttering factories, even for a few weeks, because you can't get the stuff you need to make them run, that's a much bigger problem.
And Tony, all of this is the background music, although we should probably consider it as being more important than background music. You know, there's a piece in The Economist today saying we should read all of Trump's trade deals as a creative way to hobble China. I mean, that ultimately is his aim here. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think the timing of some of his negotiations is also interesting, when he chooses to put out what. And you see it very clearly. I mean, I'm following the talks with the EU very closely, and the EU and China are set to meet for a summit in 2 weeks. And so obviously he knows very well that, any agreement between the EU and the US now won't, make things easier at the summits between the EU and China. Mm-hmm. And you've also seen, the Commission President Ursula von der Leyen already really shifting her tone about China just to get closer to President Trump. It seems like, his strategy, at least in part, is working.
Antonia Zimmerman from Politico and Dennis Staunton from the Irish Times, thank you both. Coming up next, some breaking news on the presidency.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.